Hey, Los Angeles. Are you looking for unique 4th of July plans for you and your friends or family? LA's greatest rivalry returns to Rose Bowl Stadium for a July 4th edition of the El Tráfico soccer matchup as the LA Galaxy return to their original home to defend their turf against LAFC. Last year, a record crowd of over 82,000 fans were on hand to witness the Galaxy victory. That's July 4th at Rose Bowl Stadium. Guaranteed fireworks both on and off the field and a celebration for all of LA. LA Galaxy versus LAFC, the Rose Bowl edition. Tickets at lagalaxy.com/tickets.
Welcome back to Now. No Opportunity Wasted. I'm your host, Angelica Ross, and we are going to continue this conversation with Aaron Axelman on the film Israeli-ism. I had to break it into two parts because there was just so much to unpack. In the last episode, we learned about pinkwashing. We learned the difference between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. And we also learned the importance of identifying the real culprit, white supremacy, and that we all must stand together to stand up against all instances of white supremacy, oppression, racism, and violence. When we say never again, we should mean that ish. You hear me? So before we get back into that conversation, today is March 1st, and I want to read from our quote, Buddhism Day by Day, Wisdom for Modern Life by my mentor, Daisaku Ikeda. And March 1st says, quote, words can either be the root of discord or a force for unity. They can be the origin of deception or the key to learning. They can be the instruments of plotting and intrigue or weapons for truth and wisdom. That is why it is so crucial to speak out ever more vigorously for what is right. Again, these Buddhist words be always on time, honey. So let's go ahead and get into this conversation. Part two of Faith and Fallacy, Israelism with Aaron Axelman. What has it been like to have someone like Simone who, I mean, to me, embodies what I would hear as your nice Jewish girl. You know what I mean? Like, I'm watching Sex and the City. I feel like she's what they, nice Jewish girl. The one you, like, just pretty, young, smart, you know, respectable, all these different things. What would the strategy look like with both of you taking this on together?
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, and, you know, I realized that I was queer, you know, as I said before, you know, at 15, but I grew up in Trump country in rural Maine. And, you know, up until that point, you know, I thought that I was, you know, I'm Jewish, but, you know, I didn't understand how Jews were kind of white, kind of not. So it seemed like I was a white person. I was like a white man. I was like, yeah, life's not that bad. And then at 15, I was like, oh, shit. The world is not nearly as friendly as it was. And I realized at that point that my life was in danger. I mean, you know, in real ways. I mean, people, you know, it was, you know, I grew up in a very rural, pretty wild place. And I realized that the world, you know, that kindness was not something that was a given in the world. And I realized that the world was incredibly fucked up. Mm-hmm. I obviously knew that before that, but it became very real to me as a young person. And that has, you know, that's driven my, you know, my life ever since. But it's wild. I didn't actually come out publicly until 2018. Wow. So, and Pose was actually a really inspiring thing for me. And I didn't come out as like, I didn't come out as trans till like 2020. And I only changed my name from Eric to Aaron like 5 months ago. So it's been, and I'm not on hormones yet. I'm thinking about it.
Well, this is the thing. So you know, and I mean, maybe you don't fully know as this is like your beginning of a journey for you. But it's like, that alone is a challenge. So to throw this on top of all of that, while you're in the spotlight of criticism, have you seen these pieces of your identity be weaponized in this process?
Only a little bit, which is honestly pretty surprising. I mean, obviously, people attack me all the time now. That's just what it is. But honestly, only a couple times. There was like this crazy right, you know, far right wing paper that like Tucker Carlson helped create a while back called like, what's it called? Like the Daily Caller. And they made one article where it's like trans director, blah blah blah. And they did like, but honestly, apart from that, it not very much. And it's been pretty wild, you know, because I've kind of, you know, I came out, you know, kind of as the film was being created. It's been kind of cool that people have kind of focused on the film itself and not that I'm trans that much. And obviously I'm down to talk about being trans anytime. Like it's, you know, that's why I'm so grateful to you and other people who were publicly trans and just made
well,
that
possible.
Well, I
have to tell you, I have learned, everything that I've learned, especially initially about all this, was from a trans Jewish anti-Zionist person named Ita. And they, and I think she goes by she pronouns too, but just so brilliant. Just like, I would just sit and listen to this person talking, and I'm just like, wow. And then it just became such a trusted, for me, I think queer people, as we reject sort of the boundaries that society puts on us, because they're there, yep, whether you are Jewish, Black, Muslim, Buddhist, you know, whatever it is, like initially there are these boundaries, but it is the queerness,
yep,
that helps us to break through these barriers and to speak to a truth that we know is not always seen or talked about.
Yes. It shows us that the world is not how it is. The world is not how we always see it. Like, yeah, like being queer, I think, shows you just different layers of how the world works. And I think has been very helpful for me. And yeah, and being able to investigate, you know, and see deeper layers than what I thought. And again, and you know, for Israel, again, like we're really taught that it's this magical, mythical, almost perfect place. And again, but what's great is that there also are Israelis who speak up against the policies of the Israeli government.
Oh my
and
goodness.
A lot of Israelis
I don't know.
Are,
I don't think we would be as far along as we are right now without Jewish anti-Zionists and folks who are willing to sort of like speak. I we wouldn't be like it, because it would be because that's what was happening initially, was everyone was being villainized immediately, yeah, for speaking up on Palestine. So it wasn't until you saw Jewish organizations standing up and speaking up that some of that lightened up.
Totally. No, and because, you know, I think what we can do is we can show that, look, like criticizing Israel is not anti-Semitic at all. Like Jews criticize Israel all the time. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. I think also what we can show is that, you know, we can fight for Palestinian rights and fight anti-Semitism, because anti-Semitism is real.
Absolutely.
Hatred of Jews, conspiracy theories towards Jews. Again, I grew up in a place where people believed a lot of conspiracy theories towards Jews. Again, like people grew up talking about, you know, how Jews controlled the media, Jews controlled the banks. Totally crazy stuff, and people believe it. Again, the people in my hometown who vote for Trump, many of them believe it. But I think what we can show is that, you know, again, as you talked about before, we have to be part of a multiracial movement against racism in all forms. That's how we find safety.
It's just like when someone does something bad, let's say a celebrity does something messed up, and then a lot of folks in the public might easily slip into fat phobia, into all kind of things that
exactly
just are not
aren't about that.
Aren't about that. Are not addressing the issue. And, you know, so it's because it's one of those things where I think it's a very delicate conversation to address the systemic development of violence that has become what was once a defense mechanism of creating a sort of safety that has then become an indoctrination to sort of make an entire people susceptible to defending Israel in moments where it should be open to criticism. And that is, it's like this relationship thing of when you know, I think so many of us are used to this space where for so long the game plan was always we have a united front, and then when we get back to the house, I'm gonna tell you, now you know you shouldn't have said that. That was wrong. That was so far left. Why would you say something like that? We got to do better and blah blah blah. But I think that things have gotten to a place where I think a certain element of integrity and transparency has to be had across intersections that says, and it's something that we see, I think, in political parties as well, where in the conservative right, you don't see a level of accountability with anyone of there that's running over there that's doing anything. But with a lot of Democrats, at least the Democratic base, you see that we have gotten to a place where we can't just have this united front without having conversations in the public eye saying, hey, no, we don't just blindly follow along. Excuse me, that's ableist for me to say that. But we don't just follow along without question, without being informed. And that's okay. It's okay to ask questions. You are not anti-American. You are not a disruption to the status quo, or unless you need to be, unless you literally need to be a disruption to the status quo, because you are asking the right questions. It comes down to religion, even with Christianity as well, where having people following and not having people be able to question the leadership of being able to separate, sort of church and state. It's a place where we're going to realize, mayday, mayday, we have a problem. And you know, as a queer and trans person, I want to say to, especially to those who are listening, especially to my Jewish queer folks, I grew up in the church, and I grew up, you know, studying Christianity and learning that I was an abomination and all these things. And what I know for certain is that all of these religions, all of these practices point back to the same source, whether you want to call it God, whether you want to call it all these different things or what have you. And all across the world, we've had these teachings that have done their best over time at the times that they've had to speak to and help the people make sense out of life and out of our existence and out of these spiritual places. And one thing that Maya Angelou has gifted us with is the saying of, when you know better, you do better. Yeah. And it is one of these things that, for especially queer and trans LGBTQ people of faith, I want you to know that no matter what faith background you come from, is that there is evolving that is happening. Some of it has already happened. Some of it still needs to happen. But that you do not have to give up your faith. You do not have to leave your culture. But it's okay to ask questions of your culture and to be a part of the energy and the people who make it better, who make your faith and those things more poignant and have actual validity, because it's not being co-opted by colonizing efforts. We have seen over centuries what violence and colonization and the lower elements of human desire have done to overshadow our spiritual purposes. And so, like, I just really want to say, Aaron, that you are on a spiritual purpose right now. I am so grateful for the work that you're doing. When I watched this film, I had so many mixed emotions, and a lot of the emotions was a influx of compassion for both Palestinian people and Israeli people. Like, if anything out there at all, because what's unfortunate about what Israel is doing is it is not helping.
It is
not
helping. No.
It's not America's, good for Jewish people either.
It's not good. No, listen, it's not helping the case of the people's feeling towards Israel. But let me tell you also what it's not helping is people's feelings towards America. And I am at the same heat and energy that I feel right now for Israel and Netanyahu, I feel right now for America and Biden, because it would not be happening without us funding and the money for the bombs. I know just here alone, Governor Kemp, Brian Kemp, here in the state of Georgia, approved $10 million of our taxpayer dollars to go to Israeli war bonds. And so the ways in which our politicians, our government has been trying to divorce themselves from saying there's nothing they can do. Well, maybe not much you could do now, because Netanyahu has already turned us into his bitch, basically, and said, that's cute, America, that you want to try to tell us to do anything, but we're friends and all, but we're not stopping what we're doing, and we're not, you know, and seeing that but our leverage is gone.
And what's so sad is that, again, we could change this, again, if we had an American president who was willing to stand up and just say no, you know, and just it's as easy as that.
But our American president self-identifies as a Zionist.
And it's interesting, you know, and there's a lot of, I think, reasons why, and our film doesn't really get into this that much, but there's many reasons independent of American Jews why the American government has supported Israel so much. A lot of it's just military. They just see Israel as a key military ally. So totally independent of any relationship American Jews have with Israel. It's just that it's just a military ally that they think they can count on. Another part is Christian Zionism. And many Christians really believe in this kind of bizarre theory that if all the Jews go back to that land, the second coming will come, the second coming of Christ will occur. And many people also just have this, because of the relation between the Old Testament and Christianity, they had this strange, not necessarily obsession, but kind of just fascination with the Jews and with the Israeli state. And they love Israel. A lot of these Christians just love Israel in this very bizarre way. And it's not even good for us, because again, the idea of the second rapture, the Jews do not do well in the second rapture.
No.
When the second rapture happens.
No.
Jews, it doesn't
matter. Not in their story. No.
Not in their story. So there's a number of reasons, again, independent, you know, of American Jews, why America has supported Israel unconditionally. And it's deeply tragic, because the Palestinians are the ones who have suffered every single time. And it's as you talked about before, you know, it takes all of us to fight this. And, you know, luckily there have been amazing Jewish people the entire time who have criticized mm-hmm. Israel and who have been mm-hmm. willing to look at the reality of Israel as opposed to the fantasy of Israel.
What would you say to a lot of this celebrity? You see a lot of Jewish celebrities who have not yet, this information hasn't hit them yet for some reason. What will be, because the thing is, you have, they have platforms. They have many of them, millions of followers. What is your message to Jewish celebrities here in America?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's not that hard for many of us to recognize we live in a country that has oppressed other people. Is it really that strange that Israel has done similar things? It's not very hard for most of us to realize, yeah, we live in a country and it has treated people in horrific ways. Is it really that difficult for us to realize that Israel has done very similar things? Like, what makes it so hard to believe that Israel has treated people that way? And I think a lot of it is that we, because of our history as oppressed people, we don't want to believe that we could oppress other people. We really don't want to believe that. Again, I don't want to believe that either. And again, I didn't believe that for a very long time. But once you see it, again, as you say,
you can't unsee it.
And I think what I would tell people is that, again, there's a really great line, I think, towards the end of our film from this really amazing rabbi named Rabbi Miriam Grossman. And she says, you know, when you talk about Palestine, you are not risking your Jewish identity. You are not risking your Jewish history. The only thing you're risking is your denial. Right? We are in denial about Israel. Mm-hmm. And again, Israel, again, I was in denial. Many of us are in denial about America, and we learn. You know, when we learn that we have not been told the whole truth.
Paint a picture for me. What does it look like? What does it look like after the aha? after the aha moment that so many Jewish people are able to detangle?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of it's tragedy because a lot of our communities are based around supporting Israel. And a lot of families, you know, our identity is largely about supporting Israel. So it's very difficult for a lot of young American Jews when they realize that, again, that the thing that they're supporting is oppressing other people. It's very difficult because they often risk losing their closest relationships. And it's been much easier for me. My family's quite left wing. And when I began to really begin asking questions, my family came along with me. And they began asking the same questions. And my dad spent time in Israel in the 60s. And he said that he always knew something was wrong. He always knew that there was something wrong. And so I'm very grateful that my family has not fully support me, where it's much more difficult for many people because when you start criticizing Israel, it feels like you're criticizing your very community. You're criticizing the bonds of your community. So it's not easy. It's very hard and it can be very isolating. But I think what's so wonderful now is that there's massive Jewish communities who are just as Jewish as anybody else. And they also criticize Israel. They also say, not in my name. And they say, live out our Jewish values to the best of our ability, we must fight for Palestinian rights, partly because we must fight for the rights of people all over the world, but also because it's our relatives and it's our people who are doing this. And so we have an extra responsibility to do whatever we can, whether big or small, but it's not easy.
And it's also a part of what is keeping the status quo together, because again, the longer it takes for people to have this aha moment, the longer we're going to be steeped in this kind of conflict. Yep. I want to encourage you and affirm you and I know it's real. I know for a lot of Jewish people out there, this has got to be very hard. This has got to be really, really hard to kind of unpack and deal with. But I want to sort of not compare, but to offer the fact that as a Black trans person, I am a part of a lot of activists and advocates who right now are struggling with a similar kind of accountability with those who would be, I guess, considered the mainstream aspects of our Black community who have aligned with white supremacy. And it's very simple to like sort of see once you see it, but they have opted into taking up the tools of white supremacy, whether that is homophobia, xenophobia, all classism, patriarchy, all of these different tools that we have brought into our own community and have created oppression with. And now it's this situation where, because white supremacy and racism has been a system that has been devastating to Black and brown people and the violence of it all, what's unfortunate is that the oppressed can become an oppressor. And you have, whether it is Black people who have joined the police force, or whether you have Black people who are Democrats and are part of the people who are not helping us move forward and are also helping to, create policies that are not progressive. It really is a place where we have to be, as queer and trans people. I think we're going to continue to have to be the mirrors and hold up a mirror to our communities with love, in the same way that James Baldwin said that I love America so much that I reserve the right to criticize her and critique her perpetually. Yeah. I want us to be better. I want us to do better. And that is not hate. That is not being a self-hating Jewish person. It's not being a self-hating Black person to want to call on our people to rise up and be
to do better.
What is next for you? What is for you personally, as especially you're on your, I mean, because I would see this film definitely as a huge piece of advocacy. And what I think is so amazing about this being an advocacy piece and you being a part of the community is that so many times people accuse folks in our community of being single issued or only caring about LGBTQ issues and standing there. And you have come out swinging on an issue that absolutely affects LGBTQ people, sure, but it's not the central the advocacy of this situation. Are you going to be going into more advocacy? Are you doing more film work? Like, what is next for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we're definitely gonna, you know, this film, I think, will have a pretty long lifespan. So I think, I mean, so right now we're on tour. I mean, I'm in Vancouver right now. We're doing a bunch of, we have a screening actually. I'm going in 2 hours. I'm going to a screening at the University of British Columbia. And then we have a bunch of screenings the next couple of days with like amazing, you know, activists, including Naomi Klein and Gabor Mate, who's a Holocaust survivor himself. So we're really honored that so many activists are see this film as a useful tool. And that was a big goal of the film, was to make a tool that, you know, that especially the Jewish left and that Palestinian activists would kind of run.
It's truly incredible. Yes.
And I mean, you know, so, you know, we're doing a ridiculous number of screenings, you know, in the next few months, but also people are just organizing their own screenings now. I see all the time people are just projecting, you know, renting it for $5 and projecting it, which is amazing. So, I mean, you know, I definitely will, you know, this will be my main thing, you know, for at least a year or two, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of I co-founded with my main film partner, Sam, a nonprofit production company, and we do other films too. This is the only one that I'm like creatively leading, this film. He and I are leading it together. But the next thing, I mean, you know, I think one of the reasons why I think we were able to make an effective film was that it's based off our own story, right? It's
something
that we know really well,
right?
You know, both in terms of the left-wing Jewish community and the right-wing Jewish community. I know those worlds intimately, so I could really get into those worlds. So I think I got to figure out, you know, something that would I have a personal connection to, which there's a good chance, you know, I'll make something, a documentary about trans folks.
Well, let me give you at least this invitation. This March, around the Trans Day of Visibility, I believe, is our next annual Trans Tech Summit, sponsored by JP Morgan Chase. It's basically an online summit of teaching tech skills, everything from coding to, you know, being a influencer and doing social media.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And it's completely free to our folks. But I would love for, you know, we're just currently accepting submissions for like folks to share their knowledge and things like that. Would love for you to swing by.
And, of course.
I
of
think
course.
It would be incredible. I think we'd also can screen we can maybe do a screening.
Sure.
Of
let's do it.
Oh my goodness. So it would be amazing, because here's one of the things that I'm doing here in Georgia is, obviously people know that I have said goodbye to Hollywood. And again, I sometimes have to keep reiterating what I mean by that. And I'm not someone who likes wallowing in sickness. And when I realize that something is sick, I like to kind of sort of separate myself from that and heal. And so, you know, there's a lot of things from the stories we've heard from Cassie talking about her experience to the things we hear about actors all the time, whether it's with Harvey Weinstein or whether it's Ezra in The Flash and different things like that. Like, it's so much violence and abusiveness within Hollywood, but I have left that space to model with my own life what it looks like and means to live a creative life, because that's just who we are.
Yeah.
And Hollywood we cannot allow Hollywood to sort of arrest and co-opt our dreams and make us feel like there's only one way to sort of achieve those dreams. And so one of the ways that I've been able to demystify sort of the path to Hollywood is to kind of reveal that as long as you're an asset into the space, whether that is sound, camera, lights, graphics, editing, you know, there's so many different things when it comes to production and filmmaking. And so that's really a huge part as well of the Trans Tech Summit, because I know so many of our people want to be in narratives and filmmaking and all that. And sometimes we only think about the front of the camera aspect of it. But knowing that when you become a part of the folks who roll their sleeves up and create the narratives and tell the stories, then you're not always waiting for someone to green light, approve, or, you know, turn your life on like a light switch. But I want to show our people how to access the technology that will put storytelling into their hands.
Yeah, I mean, our film, again, you know, we're a tiny nonprofit film production company. We're totally independent. You know, wow. we've been trying to get on streaming sites, and they're not having it right now. So,
wow.
You know, we are totally independent.
Of course, and they're not having it.
Yeah, they're not having it. So, again, you know, and you can do it. You know, we don't make a lot of money. You know, and we do a lot of client work. So, how we make a living is we often, you know, we make videos for left wing organizations and individuals, but through donations and through people renting the film, we're able to keep this project going. So, you know, we are.
What is the name of your company?
Tikkun Olam Productions, TikkunOlam. It's a Hebrew phrase.
Okay, well, listen, we're gonna put a link to that into the show description and all of that, because listen, one thing that people have to understand is that when you see folks doing the work that we want to see happen, and folks are, a lot of times we know that it costs, advocacy many times does not pay.
Took us a long time to raise money for this film. In the first 3 years, we had no money. I basically funded it by tutoring. So I would just tutor high school students.
I was going to say, there was somebody, I think it was Brad or Bob or Bill Axelman or somebody. Is there some? I saw another.
That was my brother.
Yeah, I was like.
My brother donated.
I saw a producer name on their Axelman. I said, I know that. That's a family member chipping in, because that's how much they believe in that. But, you know, it's the fact that we do have to have these sort of side income streams and different things. Yep. And I want, one of the things I want to say to folks listening is it is so important for you to be a patron of, to support in any way that you see, whether that is donating to nonprofits or whether that is just choosing to subscribe to buy merch, whatever it is, because we do so much for the most problematic of celebrities and rappers and folks, you know. And I always, in Buddhism, we have this in the Lotus Sutra. It talks about becoming a celebrity of the mystic law. And basically all the mystic law is something that nods to the fact that no matter who you are and what body you are in, that everybody has equal access to the source that gives us wisdom, enlightenment, compassion, and everything to be able to have an enlightened life. And so to become a celebrity of the mystic law is literally to become someone who is celebrated for being just some random person who is yet another example of how anybody can have this sort of life. And so know that you can create a life and be creative and be celebrated and be valued without having to align yourselves with oppressive systems. We are learning right now through so many movements that boycotts work. That a lot of things, listen, money is where people start to listen. It's all, I hate this, that is the way that it is, but money talks. And so when you start hitting people's bottom line, all of a sudden people start making statements. So one of the most powerful parts of this documentary is the account and experience of ex-Israeli soldiers.
Yep.
Who are telling you firsthand
what it's like to be an Israeli soldier.
One thing that I'm grateful for Buddhism, I will say, is it has given me the ability to have a kind of compassion for folks that sometimes people just don't have the range to have compassion for. When I thought about how these Israeli soldiers are trained to just occupy and completely just on command, occupy a Palestinian person's home to become a presence of threat. And to, when I saw like the story of one of the military, one of the soldiers who brings him to the rest of the crew and he does his job and then sees that he's kind of a part of a system that is even taking it even further. And now is beating and being violent with this guy and then imprisons this person. And what I thought was so infuriating to me was I remember seeing a clip on The View and I saw Whoopi Goldberg talking, and there was a point in which one of the hosts was talking about the hostages
about the Israeli hostages and was also talking about the Palestinian prisoners and hostages. Yep. And Whoopi Goldberg stopped the show, stopped the thing, and was just like, let me correct you. Those are not hostages. Those are prisoners. Those are, and kind of tried to make this distinction between the hostages that Hamas has taken and the prisoners that are in prison without charges.
Yeah, you can just detain them. That's what it's like to live in a system without civil rights, is that Israel and the West Bank can just detain Palestinians just detain without
charges. So all of a sudden now, because this is what I need folks to connect the dots here on, just along with Rikers Island, yep, here in the United States, where Rikers is for many place a place where folks go just to await going
for
to
years
trial.
So we don't know for years. Sometimes.
We don't even know if they're guilty or not, or what the deal is. We ain't even gotten to all that yet. They're just being held, and Rikers, yep, is one of the most violent places, yep, on earth. And so, yep, to have a military occupation that can just grab somebody up at will, especially anybody who dares to use their platform, journalists, to do things to talk about what's going on. And then you have people who easily, because here in America, the moment we hear about somebody put into prison, we start asking questions. What did they do? Yeah. They must have did something. Well, maybe they shouldn't have been outside at that. I mean, it's a whole bunch of all of a sudden excuses, yeah, for why we start aligning with why it might be okay for folks, yeah, to be. And so I want to make it clear right here, right now, that as well, is that there are a lot of folks when we talk about. Because there was if I'm clear, and I think your film talked about this as well. Because this film was made before October 7th.
Well before.
And that is what is wildly serendipitous about this project, is this was made before October 7th. Because our politicians and so many people, when I tell you they have been on message to go back to October 7th, and the fact that this has been hitting the nail on the head. This documentary right here has hit the nail on the head, especially when you are having the words come directly from Israeli soldiers who are telling you what it's like to not only do what they're doing, but to snap out as if they were. Like, we've seen movies and films like this where people were under some sort of spell and they didn't realize they were being controlled by this thing, and then realizing, I've been lied to,
yeah,
about so many things.
Totally. No, I think that's what's so tragic, is that, you know, both American Jews who joined the Israeli military and Israelis, you're really told, like, you're defending the Jewish people. You're protecting the Jewish people. So you really believe that. But when you actually find is that, especially when people are stationed in the West Bank, what you're actually doing is you're upholding an apartheid system in the West Bank. And so these young kids, again, like, you know, who really think that they're doing a good thing, they've been told by their adults that they're doing a wonderful thing, realize that they are very literally soldiers in one of the few apartheid systems in the entire world right now, where literally Palestinians, you know, you have Israeli settlers born next door to Palestinian citizens. The Palestinians are born into military law. They get tried in military courts.
Yeah.
They do not have due process. They do not get to vote in elections.
And they're literally called children of darkness. Like Netanyahu, it's as if we want to ignore the fact that it's been very clearly communicated. There are no Palestinian civilians. There are no good Palestinians. They're all children of darkness.
And that's why it's like, you know, it's so devastating, because again, you know, a lot of the things that Netanyahu and various government ministers have been saying about Palestinians, if you replace the word Palestinian for Jew, you realize that what they're saying is unbelievably racist. But Palestinians have been so dehumanized in so much of, you know, our communications and our media
I have heard that growing up as a black child in racist neighborhoods, that I'm a child of darkness. Yeah. So I know what it's like to be counted out before I've even had a chance to communicate to the world who I am. One of the things that
I want our listeners to know is that if you are breathing and you are an adult, there is a very high chance that you have been lied to.
About a variety of things.
So I know we, oh my goodness. So Jewish people, Christian folks, Black folks, Latinx folks, Caribbean folks, disabled folks, folks with mental health issues, folks with addiction issues. Almost on every topic, baby, I'm here to tell you, you have been lied to. And it is well past time that we start living in the light of truth.
Yeah.
That we understand that is not just a cliche, but the truth will, in fact, set us all free, and understanding that none of us are free until we all are free.
No, thank you. And again, and I think what's also true is that, again, that none of us are safe until all of us are safe too. And that, you know, again, like October 7th was horrific. You know, I know people whose family were killed. But the solution to that is not to kill 20 times more people. It's like the idea that people literally think, do you really think that killing 20 to 30 times more people is going to create safety? It's like, it's absolute madness. And the only way to actually create safety is to create a system in which all people have equal rights.
Yes.
Which all people are born into the same legal system.
Absolutely.
Because if we don't create the conditions for hope, people are going to find extreme
conditions
solutions
for
exactly.
despair. And yeah,
exactly.
and especially
exactly.
when you think about, like, again, it's not, I think people are so quick to call people Hamas sympathizers and all these different things. When you are someone who stands against violence, you're standing against all violence.
Exactly.
And so I don't want to see any of this, but what I know is that you cannot tell half the story. And yes. that is the only thing. It's like when you're talking about people born into an open air prison, born yeah. into having your electricity, your internet, your water, yeah. Things, and then to see things like the Holy Land Trust, I was looking at in your film. I just have so many notes from watching. Amazing organization that is
incredible.
That has been doing work to like try to like provide help, try to get clean water, you know, to the folks in Palestine, but even having their efforts sabotaged by the Israeli military, you know, throwing dead animals into the water supply and things like that. Like when I would hear things like that, I'm just like, what's happening right now is evil. It's evil. And it's on. And what's bad about it is it's striking up this anti-Semitism that's judging all Jewish people and all, you know, all folks without being able to pluck out the root of the evil that is happening.
And that's why, again, you know, yeah, and that's why, you know, we can fight anti-Semitism while fighting.
We have to.
Right, so we have to. And again, I really like what you talked about earlier. It's like when we criticize Israel, we must criticize it on reality. On facts. And some people take it too far, and they basically, even though they fight for Palestinian freedom, they end up believing in crazy conspiracies, either about Israel or about all Jewish people. And again, like Israel, again, we can criticize Israel based on what they're doing. Israel
you know, I think Israel does not control the world, but I think the hard part to swallow and the hard part that needs to be unpacked is the systemic, the building of a system. And so I think that that's where people take things into, you know, sometimes I use the wrong words. I want to say hyperbole, but I don't know if that's the right word I want to use. But that's where people take things into such a extended place because they recognize a essence or something, and then they take it and make it into this almost stereotype of something that can be used for racism, for different things or whatever, when there's very real language for systemic oppression. And exactly. I think that is what we have to talk about because that is control. That is certain things. but we can talk about, and because systemic things have receipts to them. Fortunately,
absolutely.
The thing we can do is follow the money, and then we
mass
can,
incarceration. Mass incarceration has receipts. You know, it's like
receipts.
You see how these systems are built into being. You see how the occupation has been built over many decades. Again, you know, I think hopefully what our film also shows is that. I think, again, you know, because we've been so oppressed historically and because Jews have often been on the right side of history, you know, we fought for so many amazing social justice movements, both in the U.S. and abroad. We want to believe that, again, that we couldn't do something like this. We really want to believe that. But it's like we're not that different from anybody else. You know, it's like just like, again, our film, one of the big inspirations for our film was this film, Jesus Camp, which is, a film about kind of indoctrination.
I've seen Jesus Camp.
Yeah.
Whoa. And again, Jesus Camp, actually. But yeah, totally. Yeah.
And again, you know, we Jewish people have been oppressed like many other groups, and we are vulnerable to being the oppressors and vulnerable to indoctrinating ourselves like many other communities.
Absolutely.
And we're not that different. We're not that different. And it's tragic.
I stand with you. I'm standing 10 toes down with you because I want us, because I know that as a trans person, sometimes I get accused of, you know, there, because there's this conversation of, are you black first or are you LGBTQ first? And it's like, listen, baby, I'm all of it. Number one,
I don't have to choose.
I definitely do not have to choose. But yeah. I think that with so many things that we have experienced, you know, what I am feeling and realizing, and at least in my view and my approach as a leader, what I'm going to be advocating for is for us to start to study elements of abolition and restorative justice and to start to offer accountability and atonement, both on a collective and individual level. We as a culture have to start modeling what it looks like to say, I messed up. I'm sorry. To also create a space where we don't feel like these are indictments on people's characters, but that we can actually, as human beings, have the actual muscle to change and grow, that we are an organism that can shift, that can do better, that can change. But in order to do that, we've got to start to get comfortable and conditioned with the cyclical nature of accountability, because it's a pie that has infinite amount of slices.
Yeah.
And that's everybody why honestly, can get a slice. Yeah.
And that's why I'm really proud, you know, of progressive Jewish people who've been willing, you know, to look reality and have been willing to change, because it's not easy. And again, you know, that's what gives me a lot of hope, is that, you know, we're at a point now where polling shows before October 7th that, again, about 40% of Jews under 40 think Israel's committing the crime of apartheid. And almost all those people, I'm sure, started out as pro-Israel.
Right.
So a huge proportion of our Jewish community has already been willing to change. And so now it's up to the rest of our community to change. And it's not going to be easy, but I truly do believe in my community's ability to change.
Well, I believe in this film and this film's ability to be a huge part of that change. It hit so deeply in my heart, and I am not a Jewish person, and it just made me feel so hopeful for Jewish people to be able to find purpose, healing, validity, refuge, all of the things that they would want to find in their faith after we all heal from this.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend. No. And again, you know, your work has helped me heal too. Again, like, you know, the greatest trauma of my life was being queer, right? Was growing up in a place that didn't accept me and having to, you know, hate myself for, you know, almost for 13 years, you know, that was, and the fact that you and so many other, you know, people, you know, you guys have done an amazing job by just being you. I mean, again, Pose and shows like it were huge for me in terms of just like, I'd never seen trans people on TV before, ever. I didn't know what it was like to actually live, you know, a successful trans life and just be you. And so again, you know, I'm very grateful. It came out, you know, Pose came out when I was coming out. So it was like, and seeing everything you've done really, really amazing stuff. So I'm very grateful, my friend.
All right. Well, I hope you learned something, because I sure did. I learned a lot.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for just being amazing and doing this work. Thank you to your co-director, Simone, for doing this work. This is such an important film. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Google up, look up Israelism. You can rent it right now and watch it, have a private screening, or you can rent it for a screening and book it. However you need to do it, I need everyone actually to go see this film, Israelism. Now, before we go, I just want to drop one more breadcrumb of Buddhism. I don't really have the time. I'm in Los Angeles right now. I'm traveling right now. I'm packing. I just got my hair braided. I'm about to head out to Issa Rae's soft launch of her new lounge that she's doing, and I'm flying out in the morning. So I can't fully go deeply into this breadcrumb. So it's truly going to be a breadcrumb today. And I just want to explain karma for a second. And I want us to understand that karma is not something that is good or bad. In Buddhism, we don't really associate things with good or bad. We focus more on cause and effect. And that we understand that even in this lifetime, before this lifetime, because Buddhism believes in reincarnation and the cyclical nature, and this ain't the first time at the rodeo for me. I've been here before. And so who knows, in a world that is constantly being oppressive to women and to female energy and has been racist and have been all kind of things, who knows how I participated in that in my previous body? I don't know. But all I know is how I'm living right now, period, is my karma. It's not good or bad. Because if you ask someone else, me being a Black trans woman would be bad karma. But baby, what I have learned is that it's a blessing to be Black, trans, and feminine, and non-binary, and exactly who I am. This is my karma. This is what the causes in my life have created this effect. And I am on such on purpose that folks may call the simple fact that my mom and the struggles that I've had with my mom and her initially, you know, not being supportive and the things that she said to me, I've spoken about all these things before, but me being a Black trans person in my family is bringing karma. So you call it good, call it bad, call it what you want to, but that's not what we do, especially as Buddhists, and that's where karma comes from. So we don't judge people based on that. We don't, because everybody has karma and everybody has their own to deal with. So instead of judging folks based off of what you think is good or bad karma, focus on doing something right now, today, to put a good ripple effect in the world, to put good causes that you know will create good effects in your life. You may not ever be able to work off. What I'll say is this. It is fruitless to worry about the bad things and the mistakes and the missteps that we've done. I think I explained this actually on the last episode as well. All we can do right now is focus on making the most out of the current moment. No opportunity wasted, y'all. I'll see you next week.